God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone here tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you by first name.
Hey, everyone. Excuse me. My name is Moira, and I am back in my first 30 days.
Welcome, Moira. All right. And just a little
bit. I'm John O., and I am in my first 30 days.
Welcome, John. Glad you're here. All right. Sam. You want to say hello?
Sam, alcoholic. Yep. First 30 days, day 8.
Right on. Welcome. Thanks. Rick.
My name is Rick. I'm an alcoholic. Today's my first day today.
Welcome. I'm glad you're really glad you're here. This is awesome. Anybody else? Feel free to unmute yourself. If I can't see you, there's like 3 pages of people. Go ahead and unmute yourself now.
I'm Mike, alcoholic addict. I have 7 days today. First time at this meeting.
Mike, welcome. Anybody else?
Hi, this is Rosalyn, and I'm coming back. So I'm in my first 30 days again.
Rosalyn, welcome. Glad you're here.
Thank you.
Galaxy Note. All right. Well, welcome. It's exciting. Leanne, would you read the preamble, please?
Sure, I'd be happy to. My name's Leanne. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Leanne.
Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thank you. All right. The format of this meeting is an open speaker ask it basket. Tonight, we're very excited to have Ron Kay from Doylestown, PA, come and tell his story. And after he shares with us for the next hour or so, we'll take a short break. We'll call for announcements, Seventh Tradition, et cetera. And then we're going to ask questions. So please feel free to, to send your questions to the user questions. Super excited. I've been looking forward to this all week. I don't want to take up another minute of Ron's time. Please welcome Ron.
Thank you. My name is Ron. I'm an alcoholic. And first, I'd like to say, Dave, thanks for the invite. It's always beautiful to be invited anywhere. And I want to thank all the people behind the scenes that put this together, because they're really the people that are responsible for what we're experiencing tonight. You know, like AA, it's unprecedented how this just came to a screeching halt. You know, the way we did AA, or whatever you want to call it. I come from an era where if you missed one meeting and was closed, or somebody didn't show up, that was like sacrilegious. Like, you know, that was just, I always think of like, you know, it was at Hima Jima, whatever it is, where that hill with the soldiers with the flag, like we're entrusted with this flag to keep it up. And that's how Alcoholics Anonymous works, carrying this message, living this, practicing these principles, getting free, and sharing our experience with others, how we got free so they can get free and free others. And that's a really, really beautiful thing. The format of this is, I was really excited about this because many times you get to hear speakers speak and then, okay, it's done. Boom. Everybody runs out the door and they're gone. And I don't know about you, but I always probably, those times when I would like to ask a question, you know, maybe I don't understand something and I can tell you this, if one person in this room is thinking one thing like that about something, like, I don't understand this, I guarantee pretty much all of us, we all think alike. And it can be, it's probably a universal question that we could all answer. So if you have something, throw that in there. It's really nice to have that, that Q&A interaction. I hope I do okay on that. I don't know, it's a different format than what I'm used to, but I do really enjoy, I actually do every Thursday night an interactive big book study in Doylestown. And it's back and forth where we read some of the book, we break it down, we share on it. And that has been very effective in internalizing and learning this big book. And I always say, like, if I'm sitting home alone with this big book, I don't just read it for pleasure. But when I get with somebody, if I get with a group or a presentation and I'm doing a big book study, man, it comes alive. I can just feel the energy of the book and God working through the whole process and all the words that are written in there. Marcy was talking about, so I write a morning text that goes out in the morning, and it's really amazing how many people are connected on that. And I put in there a quote that's something that I've been saying for years. That's something we didn't, my sobriety date's April 15th, 1986. And something we didn't have back in that day, and the internet and all that, the stuff that's available today. And I always say today, everybody should be a samurai steptician. There's no way, like, you don't have to look that hard. And I don't think you could have, no matter how hard you looked back then, you really had very few resources. You had to really dig, you had to go after sobriety. And I was taught to be a seeker of sobriety. I think that's the single most important thing in my recovery, is that I'm willing to go after this. I don't take no excuses. I was taught, don't blame AA, don't blame the speaker, don't blame your sponsor, don't blame the group. You know, take a proactive part in your recovery, Ron. You're responsible for your recovery. And that's a big responsibility. I knew, I'm going to talk about my alcoholism, but I knew that there was no way in a million years that Ron was ever staying sober. And if you're one of those people, like, welcome, you know. I just want to bring up this one little quote. I don't like reading, but a lot of people don't know this, that the big book tells you to use the internet. And as you would think, as old as this book is, but the forward to the fourth edition on the last page of XXIV, it says sweeping changes in society as a whole reflected in new customs and practices within the fellowship. Taking advantage of technological advances, for example, AA members with computers can participate in meetings online, sharing with fellow alcoholics across the country and around the world. And that was written 20 years ago. That's pretty amazing. Like, we always talk about this big book being divinely inspired, and to have that in there. And for many years, I'm a big believer. I love recorded talks. I love recorded step workshops. I love going to the roundups and the workshops and the big book workshops. I can't get enough of this, and I can't get free enough. That's the truth. I actually thought that I could. I thought that I could come into AA, work really hard, get super sober, and be like, thanks, I'm going back to my selfish life now, right? Like, let me go back. And I come into AA for what? Cash and prizes, right? And I don't know about you guys, but I never truly wanted sobriety. And I'm a real alcoholic, and there's a reason for that. My alcoholic mind cannot conceive of contented sobriety. You're like, no, I'm going to be happy and sober. I'm going to enjoy life. This obsession to drink's going to leave. You know, some of the AA meetings that I would walk into, they're like, you know, shoot for midnight. Just don't drink under any and all circumstances. You know what I mean? I didn't drink today. I'm a winner. And that's not my experience. I mean, like, I'm not the winner. I'm the loser. I'm the one that's homicidal, suicidal. I'm sitting there going, what are these people talking about? I remember the first experience walking into AA and looking around and looking. And I'm like, man, I'm not like you people. Like, there's something wrong with you. Wait a minute. Let me get this straight. You want to be sober on purpose. Like, who would want that, right? I'm trying, well, the book talks about the alcoholic trying to find a way to control and enjoy his drinking. And that's all I ever wanted to do. I never wanted to give up drinking forever. It's inconceivable. And first of all, it wasn't even on the table. That's not even an option. I honestly could say, if you put a gun to my head and said, Ron, here's your choice, get sober or die, kill me. That's it. I can't live like that. And I don't know what I don't know. And that there is a program where I have what we call psychic change. I see the world completely different. The world doesn't change at all. But how I see it, how I interact it, and I get down to inventory in these steps, and I see the causes and conditions. See, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I needed to drink when I got here. I need it to drink, right? And so what, something had to take place to have that removed. And today I no longer need to drink. In fact, I don't even want to drink. So here's the we call that the psychic change, is that my mind, I come here and I can't conceive of not drinking and ever being happy. And so now today I think like, wow, who would want to drink and mess up this beautiful life? Like that's something that if you even said that to me, I don't think I could have conceived of that. And I was very fortunate to have, and there's a whole bunch of things that happened in my recovery. I look back, there were like the stars lined up, and there was this one meeting, it was a big meeting. And I remember that there would be members that would come there and they were as bad or worse, and maybe not as bad, but most of them were pretty bad. And they had recovered and they talked about their life. They talked about the rewards. They talked about how they're living today. They carried a message of hope and recovery. And so that to me today, there's nothing more important than a message of hope and recovery. Because why? Because when I got to AA, I was hopeless and I knew nothing about recovery. And I needed that hope so desperately, because I'm a suicide survivor. I'm a manic depressant at my core. There is no logical reason on planet Earth that this world should be my playground today, that I'm going to be enjoying life. Let me give you a little snapshot. My life was kind of cool today. It was a beautiful, beautiful Sunday. You know, I woke up sober and alive. That's a miracle, right? And then from there, you know, just a relaxing day. I took a 2-hour nap, and my 90-year-old mother-in-law baked me a homemade stromboli that my wife brought. I'm sitting there, I'm thinking to myself, you know the old Godfather movie? I'm thinking like, this is my life. Like, you know, the old, hey, have some stromboli. And I was thinking about this in the shower because I never know what I'm going to talk about, but I remember before I got sober, I remember my mother-in-law driving around, getting in the car with me, and she's going to get me sober. She's going to stay with me all day so I don't drink. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I drink under any and all circumstances. I don't care who's in the car, how tough you are. We got one of those old stubborn Italian, oh, we're going to get Ron sober. Man, all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't get me sober. I didn't want it, right? And so anyway, what should I talk about? I think, you know, I more so qualifying how hopeless I was and some of the things that I had to work on when I got sober. I thought like for sure, like just the alcohol was the problem, right? And I say today, when I identify as an alcoholic, I am truly minimizing. And I use the word weller. I truly had to get weller to understand and really see how sick I was and how deep this disease, this family disease was ingrained in me. And I got a whole family full of alcoholics and drug addicts. And I'm a member of Al-Anon also, which is, I love Al-Anon and I love it all. And I'm an ACOA, adult child of an alcoholic, the whole family. So, you know, most of my family, they're dead from alcoholism, drinking or need to be in detox now. My wife is sober 35 years. My brother-in-law is sober 36 years. My brother, I've been saying this for a while. My brother's was sober 7 years and picked up a drink and for 12 years for it to get back here. And I always forget to change the time. I just looked and I've been saying 3 years, but it's 5 years now. He woke up at 5:30 in the morning at his wife and kids home and went down the basement and hung himself and took his life. And part of the motivation that I have today is definitely from the losses that I've experienced in my personal life. You know, in 1986, I wander into a clubhouse in Philadelphia, and the name of the clubhouse is Life or Death. And I remember thinking, life or death, you guys are a little dramatic here with that, right? Like this is like, and I'm going to tell you some of my story. Believe me, it's full of like really fun war stories. We can laugh about it today. It doesn't even make me an alcoholic. You know, it doesn't matter if you have 5 DUIs and jails and this and all these great stories, define me as an alcoholic. The inability to control the amount of alcohol once I take it and the inability to stay stopped once I made a decision to stop is what makes me an alcoholic. So I get to sponsor so many different people in all walks of life today. And I've come from the bottom and I feel like I'm at a really good spot. You know, it's amazing how I get the CEOs and doctors and surgeons and CEOs of Wall Street that I, you know, some of the hardest people to sponsor in AA, believe it or not, are the so-called super intelligent ones. The more letters they have after their name and the more money they make in the higher position, the harder it is to surrender that ego and to become right size and become teachable. And a lot of people follow that right into the grave, and it's sad. You know, I was fortunate enough to be at such a low point that there was no, I was never like, I had learning disabilities as a kid. You know, I was a high school dropout. So I get to AA, I'm like so beat up. Like I had no problem. Like I never had an exaggerated sense of self when I got here. In fact, it was the complete opposite. I felt totally worthless and hopeless, and life is just never going to deal me a good hand, and it's just rotten. And this God that don't even exist, but if he existed, he stays up all night like Charlie Brown, black cloud over Ron. Like, wait till Ron wakes up tomorrow. This is going to be great. And this is how I visioned my life. Like, ah, and I'm like, just get me off the planet, please, please, no more. I can't take no more of this life. It's too painful. And the amount of sensitivity and loneliness that I had between the two of them, you know, everything affected me and bothered me. You know, every detail of life, you know, I used to, the delusion is that in one way, I thought I was super intelligent because I would notice so much stuff, right? And I would be like, I remember going to a Perkins in Doylestown, I would have got another alcoholic, and the greeter sits us down, right? And I had noticed that he missed one of the belt loops in his pants. And I sat down and I said to the guy, I said, yo, did you see that guy miss the belt loop? He's like, yeah. I said, we're screwed, right? Like, it bothered me to the point, like, hey, I wanted to say something about his belt loop. Like, this is how I go through life, noticing every little thing. And I know things that nobody else knows because I notice everything, and you're all asleep. And let me tell you, and a lot of that's based in today's TV. I don't know if you guys watch TV. I gave up watching the news 15 years ago. I can't believe I'm still alive. I should have been dead by now. They really give you some important information. Maybe. It's funny how, I always explain it like this. The news is always past tense. Think about it. Like 1,000 people died yesterday. Well, what am I going to do about that today? Besides ruin my day and be sad about those 1,000 people. But other than that, I really don't need to know about that. I really need to know about the nearest area, the surrounding 1,500 feet. And I always get calls, you know, and this is a common call, like, Ron, you know, like, you know, let me tell you what's going on. You know, do you know what's going on in the world? And I have to pause the person. I said, well, who? Let me just tell you. I'm gonna give you a little exercise that I do. And I lived in Doylestown for 28 years. I said, go out front of your house. Walk out your front door. Look to your left. Look to your right. And then look ahead. And tell me what's going on in the world. And whatever you see, that's what's going on in the world. You turn that TV off, you'd be surprised. And what's going on in the world? Beautiful life. Really beautiful place to live. You know, I said, you call me the minute you go out that front door and you start seeing bombs dropping bodies out there. Then I'll say, hey, something's going on over there. We better address this problem. But like I said, I have not seen anything change. Doesn't matter who's president. Doesn't matter what's going on in the world. But yet I can be riddled with fear. And so the causes and conditions we talk about in the step work, that in order for me to be comfortably sober, I have to address these resentments and fears that I call them, you know, the committee in my head. And I go through life, and if I'm completely riddled with fear and I'm full of resentment, I can never enjoy the moment, never enjoy the day, never interact with people. People bother me, you know? I don't know if you can identify this, but I thought to myself, look, if we could just get the people off this planet, it'd be a pretty cool place to hang out, wouldn't it? Like, get these people out of here. They're sucking up my air. Get off my planet. Like, this is an extreme amount of selfishness. But yet, I don't think so. I'm the only one that deserves to be here. These other clowns, they're ruining the place. You know, that's more. And what I really truly identify when I do the inventory and I internalize my resentments and I inventory all the people that I hate, and it takes a long time. I've got a lot of paper and I'm hating. And what I truly identified is I really don't hate these people. I'm in competition for limited resources on this planet, and they're in my way. And I see them as a threat, and therefore I dislike them. And so my selfishness and self-centeredness it talks about in the big book, that becomes apparent. That's really what it is. I don't want to share anything. I want it all for me, you know, like all for me. And that you know, our big book talks about we got to a place called recovered, and I'm recovered from alcoholism, right? But the one thing that I'll always be recovering from is my selfishness. That's it. That's what I have to watch for. I'm not a naturally selfless person. I am the complete opposite when I walk through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know, you know, I didn't have a hard time identifying my selfishness. You know, the book says, you know, selfishness and self-centeredness that we think is the root of our troubles. My sponsor would say to me, hey, you're selfish and self-centered. I'd be like, yeah, so what? Get over it. That's how I roll. I mean, I thought that's what this was, the world, you know, go get yours, every man for himself, you know, like, and go. You know, I remember my father, my father was not a spiritual person. I love him to death. He would say, God helps those that help themselves. And I remember that line. I'm like, and you know what? I spent a lifetime on that saying, and I helped myself to a lot. And it actually destroyed me in the end. And so all these things, as I go along, the selfishness and self-centeredness, I have to get rid of this. I don't know about it. And I don't even think, like, it's even, what does it have to do with alcoholism? What does it have with me not drinking? I just came here just to, like, just stay out of jail. That's all. Just want to get the heat off my back. I was planning on staying here maybe top 60 days after 45 days in a rehab. I remember thinking 45 days in there, and I'm like, crap. You know, the coins were so important to me back then. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, I got to go 15 days to my next coin. Like, how am I ever going to do that? I hope I can do this. I was so real with fear, and I was so sure I was going to drink. And that was my MO. And that was actually a healthy fear. You know, in our, how it works, it says completely give yourself to this simple program. And I've come to witness that Alcoholics Anonymous works 100% of the time to the people that completely give themselves to this simple program. The problem is, on the first walk through the door, what AA is asking any single alcoholic to do is unreasonable. The only thing that motivates me is pain and suffering. So some of the best people that I ever get to sponsor, God bless them, I love them to death, are the people when they get behind bars. You know, it's amazing. A friend of mine, he got a 20-year sentence, and he's in jail. He calls up his spot. He's, I'll get a sponsor now. I'll work the steps now. I'll go to meetings now. I'll help alcoholics now. And so if you're an alcoholic like me on the run, and I'm so caught in it, there's no way I can stop and do any step work. But if I am separated physically by a power greater than myself, which is the prison system, maybe there's an opportunity that I can hear a message, and maybe I can change and adopt this way of living and have this problem removed, where I can live happily and freely the rest of my life. So yeah, some of the best people to work with are when they're behind bars. They call you every day. They do their step work. They do their readings. They get the rewards of doing a program. Imagine that, like actually having enough time. It's not like they could say, hey, I'm busy today. I really don't have time to work on it. You know, I get out of this program what I put into it. And that's the results of what I live today. I really do. The world has become my playground. And hopefully that could be your experience too. It's available to everyone who completely gives themselves, right? And, you know, some of the things that I dealt with long before, you know, in childhood, I was born in Philadelphia. A dysfunctional family, blah, blah, blah. But I didn't know it. Physical abuse, didn't even realize that. Had to be sober 5 years. I used to get beat with a cat nine tails, and I don't know. I honestly believed that I deserved it. I really did. I didn't even know there was anything wrong with that. You know, in fact, that would have been perpetuated. You know, a lot of the behaviors that people experience are learned and taught behaviors from their parents and their parents and their parents. You know, it keeps passing on. And so that was one thing. You know, my parents sent me to a Catholic school. I hated that. I didn't get it. I never understood any of that stuff. I remember like stained glass windows and robes and the smoke. And this is stupid, you know, and pray. And I would pray for stuff. You know, I didn't know how to pray. I don't know. I prayed for stuff. And you know what? This God never gave me nothing. And our big book talks about that. What has God ever done for me? You know, I would pray for stuff. You know, I thought that's what it was. He was like my elite Aladdin genie that I would pray for. And he would give me all the stuff for nothing. Thing. And that was a misconception in itself. And I had eating disorders as a kid. I'm overweight. And I remember this, my parents put me on a diet. I was in the fifth grade. And I remember thinking to myself, what? You put me on a diet? Like, what? And I was riddled with fear back then. Like, it was incredible. I was fearing for my life when I went to school with the public school kids that were older than us, used to like ambush us and beat the crap out of it. It was horrible. And so I would be in bed at night, like, just like, oh, I don't want to go to school tomorrow. And I even at one time, I you know, a friend of mine, I was telling a story. I mean, I only slept a couple, 3 hours a night my whole life, really. I really haven't slept 3 to 4 hours my whole life. I'm just not one of the people that needed it. Back then, we had no internet, no 24-hour TV. I mean, there was nothing. And I would be just stuck with me alone in my head at a young age. And I remember between that fear and that insomnia and just my head running, I remember going into the bathroom and getting hydrogen peroxide and drinking it. You know, a feeble amount, not enough to, but I just wanted, I wanted relief. I was looking for some relief early on. And so I had a, you know, when our book says selfish and self-centered, what happened was I'm walking through the school, and this is in that fifth grade Catholic school. I see a key in a door and I just steal it. And it turns out to be the master key to school. For the next 2 years, I systematically robbed the mission money, recess money, and anything I could for my first drink or drug of choice, that you would call it. And that was a Big Mac, fries, vanilla milkshake, and candy. You know, like, that was it. And so I was willing to go to any and all length for it to be comfortable long before I even picked up a drink, right? And so this is how it went along. And with those learning disabilities in school, I didn't do good in school. I mean, everything was a challenge in my life. Like when people come into AA and they go, you know, I did really good in school. I tested really well. I did really good in sports. And I always think to myself, am I the only born loser in AA? Like, man, I couldn't pass a test to save my life. I'm just like, so I thought there's no hope for me. As I would grow, and my parents would eventually move us out to the suburbs, and you know, I'm an alcoholic, pre-alcoholic, and what happens is I find alcohol and find the magic elixir to life. And I said, this is what I want to do. This is it. You know, so my weekends were made for Michelob or whatever, you know, like, it was like a cliche of my life, right? So started out with those weekend parties, as we all do. And then it would progress along. Eventually, I would get to the 10th grade and I was bombing in school. And so I went on a thing called co-op, and I'd work a half a day and go to school the other half a day. And in that half a day that I was working, I was taking home $175 a week. Well, back then that was a lot of money. I'm thinking to myself, this school is cutting into my, you know, my action. I mean, I can make even more money if I didn't have the school my way. Plus, every day we used to drive over to the, it was called the Tally Ho Bar over in Lambertville, or was it right across the Washington Crossing Bridge? And it was be 55 cents a quart for Budweiser and 65 cents a quart for Colt 45. And for $2, I got 3 quarts of Colt. Man, I was golden every night. I was like, this is it. You know, and I came from a kind of family, like, work hard, drink hard. I had a grandfather who was an alcoholic. Well, I don't like to call him an alcoholic, and I never thought he was an alcoholic. Highly successful, made a lot of money. And if I had to describe him, I would not describe him alcoholic. I would call him back then very eccentric. Back then, if you had enough money, you could buy yourself out of any problems, really. He really didn't have problems, whatever you want to call it. Didn't have the kind of DUI things they have today. So I kind of modeled my life. That's what I want, make a lot of money, party, drink all the time. Hey, that's what life's about, work. What else? Why would you go to work? What would you do with the money anyway? Think about it, right? Other than party and live the good life. And that's what I considered the good life. So eventually I would drop out of that high school and I was doing very, very well. I was happy. You know, I remember, this is a good part of my, you know, probably this is a part where my studies and schooling were affected by this, but we would drive, you couldn't drink at school. So I mean, back then in those days, I had a 2-foot bong on my console. So we blaze up all the way to school, be fried all day school. And then as soon as school go out, we'd go home, we would be able to drink, you know? And it was so funny. Like, I look back today, well, no wonder I never learned a single thing. Even if I could, the odds were against me. So I'd probably be one of those guys living in mom and pop's basement, because I was living at home. I had they didn't charge me for anything. And I'm living at home and I'm 17 and a half years old. And my father gets diagnosed with cancer and given 3 months to live. And right then, my whole world just like, I just wasn't prepared for this. And I always use the example, my great grandmother was alive. She was like 89 years old. I just thought like everybody just lived to 100 and that was it. Like I never even considered like people die, like not short of that. Like I didn't experience that in my life. It was never like really taught to me. And I was just blindsided. My whole world was collapsing. Now I'm drinking alcoholically, but this was just another excuse to go deeper. And I remember taking my father to the chemotherapy and it was just ugly and horrible. I have two brothers and two sisters and my mother was cooking dinner one night. She's 38 years old and she has a massive heart attack and dies. I'm like, this is it. This is what you call life. And I truly was a mama's boy. I love my mama. I did. Every morning I'd get up and have cigarettes and coffee with her. It felt like an AA meeting. We'd have cigarettes and coffee together, man. And that, it was funny how I'd come to AA later on and have cigarettes and coffee with you guys, but I used to smoke. But anyway, that level of depression and just this black vision, I was done. Just get me off this planet. And I have to get off this planet before I'm 25 was my best thinking. That was it. There was no solution to this. I'm done. I've suffered enough already that I don't want any more of this life. I have not seen one reason why I want to be here any longer. And this is how I would bumble along. I was working in Philly and I meet this woman. And I always tell this story because it's really important to my alcoholism, even in hindsight. I meet this woman and I want to further my relations with her. So I take her out I offer lunch, right? I'm a class dude from Philly. And where does a class dude from Philly take a girl on a lunch date, right? The Seafood Shanty, right? On the Roosevelt Boulevard. So I take her there. We sit down, order food. Everything's going as planned. And then I see this metal decanter with the bottle and the ice getting delivered to another table. I'm like, give me one of them, right? Man, he brings this thing over. I'm like, yeah, boy. He pours this stuff out and I taste it. I'm like, oh. And I always tell, it was Asti Spumante. And if you, no self-respecting alcoholic will ever drink that, right? And if you've never tasted it, it tastes like piss with bubbles. But man, let me tell you, boom, 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 that bottle is gone. And the next thought that comes in my head is like, I got to get rid of this broad and quick. And I quick throw in a car, drop her off to work and go right straight down to Pat McGinnis's bar. And I started drinking and what happens is the next day I go into work. I never went back to work that day. And they would say to me, Ron, what happened to you yesterday? You went out for lunch and never came back. I said, look, and I swear, I honestly said this with every fiber of my being. I said, look, I don't understand how somebody can go out on a lunch date and drink and go back to work. I said, I had known this already that I could not start drinking until after work. Because once I took that drink, it became paramount to everything else. Girl, I'll get rid of her job. I'll get another one. You know, like nothing, like, boom, the physical. And I knew nothing about AA and a physical craving and all these, the obsession of the mind. I knew none of this stuff. I'd never even heard of AA when I got to AA. I was like, what's this AA crap you guys are talking about? Like the crew that I ran in and the people that I hung with, nobody got sober. Career criminals, you know, everybody wound up in jail or dead. And that's the circle. That's why I thought that was going to be my destiny. So anyway, to identify that and look back on that and to see that alcoholism was prevalent in my life long before even I could identify it, I could identify that I couldn't start drinking without setting off that physical allergy. I knew that even without the book. Okay, but how do I stop that? I don't know how to do that. And so this would progress on multiple rehabs. I remember the first three rehabs I go through and they're trying to convince me. They're like, you're an alcoholic. And I'm so angry. And I swear to you, I used to get a pencil. I said, listen, I'll stab you in the eye if you call me an alcoholic one more time. I'm not an alcoholic. I could stop if I want to. I just don't want to. Now get off my case. And I said, I'm just here for my 28 days. So I get some freedom. And this is how my mind's working. I could not even conceive of it. Wasn't trying to hear it. And plus, we always hear alcoholics talk about their, you know, the Hollywood version of an alcoholic, right? You know, the trench coat, the brown bag on the bottle, laid on the grill. I said, listen, I've never owned a trench coat in my life. Like, I can't be an alcoholic. I truly think like that. I don't know. I don't. And so it was just a waste of time. We see that even today where people can. I believe I'm like one of the worst cases, though. And not worst case alcoholic, but worst case in, they used to say, you're delusional. I'm like, don't call me delusional. You tell me I don't know what I'm thinking. Like, I would get argument and fight over this. I said, listen, you know, like, and it's back and forth and back and forth. And there was no way to concede that. A lot of things would happen. I'd be charged with a lot of violent things. I would be shot, jailed, blah, blah, blah. I remember watching the old cowboy shows, you know, Cowboys and Indians. And I remember watching this one movie and the Indian goes, firewood are bad. And I'm like, that's my story. But I put firewood on me, man, it's bad. And there's a couple of you in here that I know that we're talking about this today. And that person said, you know, when these other, some of these people at AA, when they drink, they have a bad day. I go to jail and break out in handcuffs. And it's really funny. Like, some of us are to the extremes and don't even know how we got there, right? Like, and have all the intentions of controlling and enjoying it, you know? A friend of mine says, you know, I always have this image, you know, of like me behind this like Steinway piano in a tuxedo, you know, drinking martinis, playing like this. He says, I don't own a tuxedo. I don't know how to play the piano. And I never drank martinis. But this is how we glamorize in my mind. Like, I see that too. The only time alcohol had ever looked any good to me is when I'm on like a tropical vacation in some remote part of the world and it's beautiful white sand and I'm on the beach and not a care in the world, not a cloud on the horizon. And the guy in the white tux walks by with that silver tray with the fruit out of it and umbrellas. And my mind says, how could that hurt me? Right? It looks so inviting and beautiful. That's what I'm up against with alcoholism. Anyway, so what would finally happen that would change the whole trajectory of my recovery was I was in jail and I do big book study. You see, a lot of people think the program is about speaking. Like, this is not my program, speaking. This is a service I do for AA. It's not my program. It's actually the least and most important. The thing that feeds my soul is being on the front lines, doing the rehabs, doing the psych wards, doing the prisons, doing the detoxes. They're where I get to meet the new, the sick and suffering. And I get to carry that message because it was so important to me. And so when I went through, I was in jail and I tell the guys in jail, same thing. Like, I understand that. I understand what it's like when they say, you know, I was facing 5 years, my family and wife and everything at the time, put up a ton of money for a great lawyer, all this stuff. And they got me a deal, 2 urns a month and I don't have to go to jail. Whoa. That's a good deal. I'm not an idiot. I'm like, yeah, I'll take it. And I admit it, man. I'm not coming back to jail. I'll give them the 2 urns. Let me out of here, please. And so, yeah. And then what happened? My keen alcoholic mind, the minute the trigger, we call about, like, is this, there is really triggers? But here's the trigger. When they unlock the door and let Ron out, my keen alcoholic mind says 14 days to that first urine, two beers, two, maybe three or four, two. That's it. And this is what, and boom. Do that, I would never give him 1 urine. And be all the old, I'll see you in hell when this POs used to call me and tell the judge this, this, and this. Boom, man, did they have a field day when they caught me. They were like, oh, do you remember saying this? No, I don't, but apparently you do. And you probably need step work, right, judge? but anyway, to get back on that, I'd be in that jail and I would just keep recycling, not knowing what I suffer from or how I was ever gonna get out of this hopeless circle of drinking. And so the lawyer said to me, look, you're going back. You're doing whole five, unless you can give me something to work with. Give me something. He says, look, you got to go to rehab. I'm like, oh, crap, not rehab again. That's not 28 days. He's like, look, you got to go. There's no other. I'm like, no. So I everything under the sun not to go. Believe me, I understand that. I am just fear. I just fear being separated. I'm thinking to myself, how am I going to make 28 days with nothing? Nothing. And I got to figure a way to do this. You know, so I figured a plan. So I smuggle in 90 Valiums. I figure 3 a day for 28 days. And a couple in case there's a rough day, I have a little extra. I'm getting sober. And I would smuggle them in. Who knows how long they lasted? I don't know. I guarantee you this. I was the most spiritual guy in rehab for the first 3 days. I was like, Jill, enjoy it. You know, anyway, all would take place that would change it, which at a counselor that I had, he had one eye. And our big book talks about how to 12-step somebody, never tell them what they got to do. You tell them your story, right? I didn't know anything about the big book or 12-stepping anybody. But one thing that took place is that I had this this curiosity. And I said to him on the side one day, I said, what happened to your eye? He told me his story. He didn't say what Ron had to do. Not the first person that ever didn't tell me, like, this is you got it. This is what you got to do. He told me his story. And the wall was down. And I was listening because I asked him what happened. And I listened to his life. And I could finally see that my life paralleled his life. Might be a little different, but today he has a job and a driver's license and a wife and kids, and he's happy, and he's just a respectable member of society. And I'm thinking, that doesn't sound like the guy you're talking about that you're just telling me about. And it looked like, and I thought to myself, just that 1% of hope was there. Like, I was like, well, maybe. And that's all it took. I just needed that so desperately to see that. And what would happen? I would spend 3 1/3 years with him, still to this day, the most spiritual man I've met in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've never heard him once use a profanity and so this is where I come from. And I remember him saying, Ron, you gotta stop using profanity. I said, blank them. Like, this is how I talk. And I would say a 10-word sentence. It would be blank, 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 cake. Right? This is how I talk. He said, look, you can't do that. I said, what? He says, look, here, let me explain it like this. He says, Ron, who's the person that you love the most in this world, the most? I said, well, that's easy. That would be my grandmother. And he said, okay, well, let me ask you something. If your grandmother walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, how would you want her treated? Well, you guys better clean up your act. My grandmother's here. You know what I mean? Like, watch your mouth, clean this up, right? He said, well, why don't you look at everybody that's in AA as somebody's grandmother, somebody's mother, somebody's sister, somebody's daughter, somebody's brother, and treat them accordingly. I was like, holy God, I could see it. I was like, wow, selfish and self-centered, you know? And so now I had the conception of why I should treat other people better. I couldn't see them. I was concerned with myself. And my wife always says, if you can stop using profanity, anybody on planet Earth can. And that's really funny. That's a really funny thing to actually have. Me and my wife, we got quite a relationship. I love her to death. She's funny as crap. She doesn't think I'm funny, though, you know? Well, so she says. But if I can get her just to get a little squirt out of the corner of her mouth, it makes my day, you know? So I try hard. But anyway, let's get on this, finish this out. So from there, we didn't have aftercare. We didn't have halfway houses back then. And so my aftercare was the Salvation Army. That's where I went. And I went on this journey of seeking recovery and living this 100% of my life, making it a way of life, you know, doing it until it becomes a way of life. And little by slowly, as I recovered through these steps and things start to come back, and, you know, I mean, in 1986, like, everything was at a complete zero in my life. You know, I told you before, I'm a high school dropout, convicted felon, warrants out for my arrest. I had been shot, jailed, straitjacketed at mental institutes for alcoholic insanity. I haven't had a driver's license in 3 years for all the convictions and stuff. I owed $80,000 on a credit card scam, and it just went on. And I was like hopeless. And I'd start this journey little by slowly, and little by slowly it all would come back. And the one thing that I never realized was how quickly your life can come back when you're sober externally. And that can be a little dangerous too. And so I think I was about 5 years sober, and everything external, I almost finished all my amends. Like, I owed a lot of money, and I didn't think I'd ever pay it back in 100 years, let alone 6 1/2 years. We're around 5 years sober. I said, I'm thinking to myself, man, I got a house, a wife, a car, a job, driver's license. I mean, I got money, I'm free. I'm like a healthy person. I'm thinking to myself, I got everything in this world. What am I missing, right? Got to get me some of them kids, man. That's the next thing I thought. And I remember going to my wife and said, let's have some kids. She looks at me. She's like, are you kidding me? She says, well, your family history, my family history, your history and my history. I said, listen, the great and powerful Ron, you watch. I'll raise sober kids. I'm going to show you this. And I knew in that spot that God was sitting there and saying, oh, Ron needs a lesson in humility. I could see he's out of control. But I actually believe that. I actually believe I could do that. And so there was another self-delusion in sobriety that anyway, long story short, we have these kids, great, I love them to death, and they get to 12 or 13 years old, and they start to get in the mix, right? And it's starting to show up, and I take them down to clubhouses in Philadelphia to meet some of these guys, and they're like, Pop, it's not like we're hardcore drug addicts. We're just like potheads during the week and alcoholics on the weekend. I'm like, oh my God. I said, you guys do not know where this train is going that you're getting on. You have no idea. They're like, Pop. Anyway, long story short, it was a train wreck. Nothing, and that's what we'll get, start my journey in Al-Anon there. Nothing gets you closer to God than incredible pain and suffering. And nothing gets me working and program better than pain and suffering. I do nothing out of virtue in this program. I'd like to tell you, I never came in and said, yeah, this looks like a great idea. I want to be here. If you're one of those people and you're in AA and you're like, I don't want anything to do with this. In fact, I don't even want to be sober. Welcome. I understand that. Like, I don't want any of this. I'm mandated here. I'm court appointed in some fashion, or my life depends on it. Not that physically, but either I'm going back to jail or something. So this is that's how I get my motivation. And it would happen again with my kids to get re-energized in step work and a relationship with a God of my understanding. That was just part of it. I got a condition called congestive heart failure. I only got 20% of my heart and a pacemaker defibrillator. And I tell that story because of the fact that on paper, I could probably show you guys where there's no reason in a million years that Ron should be happy, joyous, and free every day of his life. But I am. I'm free and I enjoy it. That's why I said I woke up today and I'm alive. Like, it's a miracle. I just went through, I just lost 85% of the motor skills in my right hand, 5 surgeries. One of the things I love doing, playing tennis. I think I probably damaged the playing tennis. We don't even know. But these are some of the things that forced me to be knee deep in a program. And when I do that, I'm able, see, remember I talked about prayer and praying for stuff. I actually used to think like I should pray for a good heart. Like God's going to give me a good heart. And really I pray for the strength and the guidance and the direction I get from God to be able to navigate and live with the bad heart, with life on life's terms. And so that's what this relationship with a God does for me. Not only, people always talk about I got sober, and I really hate saying that because I didn't get me sober. I truly had nothing to do with it. It was a power greater than myself that guided me and had a whole host of things line up exactly perfect to get Ron sober. I was an unwilling participant. And so that's the beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's why I stress why a message of hope and recovery is so important, because at the most hopeless place, where do I go? Where do I get hope? If I walk into a meeting and I got 30 people complaining about their day and how miserable sobriety is and another day, like, man, I already feel like that. I feel worse when I get out of the meeting. I always tell people all meetings are not created equal. I'm responsible for the people that are around me today. And I hang with like-minded people that are about recovery. And some of the things that I identify, and I was just having this conversation with somebody on the phone today, this afternoon. I have it all the time, but a way to identify people that I don't want in my life, what we call untreated people. You can tell by the level of profanity and resentments and fears and complaints, and that's contagious, just the way positivity is contagious. So there's so much just common sense to recovery. And I have a whole fellowship in my tennis club that I belong to. I play tennis with the owner of the tennis, the Wheelstown Racquet Club, and CEO of Pfizer and Merck. And these are the people that I told you where I came from, who I play with today, and like, we're friends. I even shake my head sometimes. I go, it's funny. I always think they actually know some of my story because of the fact that I get people that drop off like notes, like, my husband's got a problem with drinking. They give them my doubles partner. Hey, can you give this to Ron? And can you help? And we get that kind of stuff. And I have nothing anonymous about me. I don't advertise it, but I also don't hide it or anything like that. I'm not in shame of it anymore. I know it's important that people know that there's somebody out there that might be able to direct them to a place where they can get some help. And I do have two or three recovering alcoholics at the club. It's a whole different fellowship. It's amazing how I look at these people and how, when you go there, we We have been quarantined the whole time at the Doylestown Racquet Club. And at one time, I think it was like 3 months ago, they sent out this email and they said, we've had over 5,000 check-ins and not one COVID case. Apparently COVID doesn't like tennis players or something. I don't know. But it's been a life-saving kind of fellowship to be there and be able to get some exercise and connection with people and do that kind of stuff. And hopefully when you get sober, you'll be able to add some really quality people in your life. You know, a lot of it can be found in certain religious, organizations. They have a lot of things that they can get involved with. And the spiritual people, I have a lot to learn from them, and the selfless people. And, you know, I told you about the congestive heart failure. That happened in 2014. And what was so beautiful about that experience is when I had that heart attack, and I remember having it at home, it was Christmas Day Eve, whatever you're going to call that. My wife says, you should go to the hospital. I said, let me see how I feel in the morning. I'm a real alcoholic, right? Luckily, well, maybe not, maybe. It depends on if you like me or not, whether I like me or not. Luckily, I was alive in the morning, and I knew I had to go there. I went over there. And the first doctor that checked me out got nervous, and then he calls a second doctor, and then there's like a third doctor, and I didn't, well, you know how it is in the hospital, stat. And next thing you know, my wife gets nervous, right? Oh, what happens next? Ron gets nervous. I just like, oh man, this is it. You know, remember Sanford and Son? I'm coming, Elizabeth. I had an Elizabeth moment, right? I'm coming. But I said, look, man, you hold it. And it was getting heavy. I said, look, you guys gotta give me 5 minutes alone in this room. Just please get out of this room, leave me alone. And they just looked at me and they did. And I just went to God and I said, you know what, God? I said, you've given me a life second to none. And if this is it, if this is the end, I'm okay with it. However, if I walk out of here, you have more work for me to do. And I swear to you, like that, peace and calm came over me. I knew I was going to be okay no matter what the outcome. See, that's what God does for me. He doesn't change the outcome. He helps me walk through life on life's terms with peace and serenity, match serenity to calamity, you know, and I needed that so important. And that was a very important part in my program, in my life. And it hasn't changed. I always go to God anytime I'm disturbed, anytime I get a resentment, every time I have a fear. That's why I need a higher power in my life. You know, a God of my understanding, not one of anybody else's, not a religious one that I had when I was a kid. This is one of my understanding, you know, and this connection is paramount to everything. And I'm able to walk through life. I mean, I'm like, life is no longer a scary place for me. The world is not a scary place. That's an amazing place because I was so riddled with fear. Oh, I was shaking in my boots. You know, I needed to drink. I needed a sedative. You know, we always give sobriety dates. We don't, you know, I honestly want a toxicology report. And what's the other one I was thinking about? Because you think about that. How many people, you know, like that's probably the toughest thing today where the hardest thing that faces Alcoholics Anonymous are these treatment centers that throw these people that are dying of alcoholism and suffering from untreated alcoholism on so many drugs and make them legal drug addicts and never give them an opportunity to apply these 12 steps in their life and recover. And that's a sad, sad state of affairs. You know, I see that just as, but I think it's, you know, this modern mentality. You know, my kids taught me how to make memes, you know, and we're just talking about that with Dave before the thing. And that you never teach an alcoholic how to make memes. And I make like, you know, Frodo from Lord of the Rings with a pill in his hand. And it's like, one drug to rule other drugs. You know, like if you're a drug addict, don't worry. We have drugs for you that'll stop you from being a drug addict. Like you can't make this stuff up. It baffles common sense. My wife was 28 years sober and my kids were dying of alcoholism. And she says, I want to go to this PROACT thing that the township puts on. And I went with her. I was like, whatever. And she was at this time. And she says, listen, I can't sleep at night. My nerves are shot. And these ladies from this PROACT, they said, oh, don't worry, honey. We have a good doctor. He'll give you something to sleep and something to calm your nerves. And I'm thinking, this is their solution? Your kid's on drugs, so we'll put you on drugs? Like and I'm thinking, like, she's 28 years sober. Like, if I, not that I was there, but if she didn't have a conviction and a strong program in her, it'd be easy to be like, yeah, give me relief and become a legal drug addict. For outside conditions. And so anything but, again, going to God. And And that was her experience. And she was able to walk through that with dignity and grace and some sanity on most days. And believe me, it was tough on both of us. So anyway, I burnt through so much time. So much about my story. You know, we're going to have to go on questions and answers, but there's so much to talk about on this journey and so many things about how this higher power has played a pivotal part in recovery and how when I walk through the door and I see the steps, and the 12 steps, on, you know, and I see AA and I'm thinking, that's stupid. I don't need any of that crap. Two things that I seen that I wanted no part of. One was God, and the second one was amends, right? Like, that is not going to happen in Ron's world. And I like to describe myself, if I had to really put it to words, would be a militant atheist. Again, if you put a gun to my head and said, listen, Ron, say the word God or talk about God, I'd say, pull the trigger now. You know, and what I come to find out and why this inventory stuff is so important is when I did that four step and I finished it out and I went to my sponsor and I was reading it to him and he asked me, he said, where is God on your four step? I'm like, God, you know, what is that? It's like they put an Easter bunny on my four step. What do you think? I'm retarded. Like, what I come to find out is that I could blame all you guys for everything external that happened in my life. But I knew when my mother died at 38 years old of a massive heart attack, that was a power greater than myself or anybody on this earth. God did that to Ron. I was a victim. And I knew then at that moment that my number one resentment was against a God I didn't believe in. And at that moment, healing could start. And talk about being blocked off from the power, at the power, or at the, however you want to put that, I was, that's how I show up. And so this type of, this victim mentality, this is how I show up to AA. Life is happening to Ron and at Ron. It's happening to me. People are doing stuff to me. You know, like Moscow changed the color of their curtains in Moscow to piss me off. Like, this is how I can take everything on this planet personally. And the joke today is I play outside in the summer tennis. So mornings when me and my wife are up there, I'm having coffee. I'm looking outside the window. It's raining. I said, oh, it's raining. I said, God hates me. Like, this is and that's the joke, because that's how I would take everything personally, everything that happened to me and at me. Anyway, we're getting to 7:59, and I really wanted to cover so much more. There's so much this that we could go on for hours and hours. The only thing I could tell you, I got to tell you this story about my son at 23 years old, dying of alcoholism. I told him he took a pinch in jail. He's down in Philly jail. I'll make it really quick because I'm out of time. But he calls me up there. This was rehab number 18. And my kids have already refused to go to AA anymore. They said, we're tired of going to AA and hearing people talk about their problems. We got our own problems. I said, that's not AA. I said, we got a 12-step program of recovery in a big book. He's like, Pop, you're an idiot, right? 18 rehabs later, he's in jail. And I'm done. I said, I'm done with you physically, mentally, emotionally. Done. I'm done. I'm done. Don't. Listen, I'm done. And he says, Pop, let me out of here. I said, I didn't put you there. And then I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I said to him, this is the absolute last thing I'll do for you in my life. I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll pay for it. I'll send you to a big book rehab in Texas. And I remember like it was yesterday. He's 29 today. He's like, big book, Texas, click. He hangs up on me right in the prison. I was like, well, that was really easy. I was like, that's easy. 2 days later, he calls me up and he says, hey, Pop. I'm like, yeah. He's like, what's the weather like in Texas? I said, it's a lot nicer than where you're at. Anyway, he would go down there and he would get into this program. And within 90 days, he was through the 12 steps, making amends. He's sponsoring guys. He's living in a recovery house. He has three jobs. Really important factor, because he was 23 years old, never had one job in his life. And me and my wife fly him back from Texas at 103 days or something like that. We go down to the airport, and these are moments in my recovery that I'll never forget. And this 23-year-old son of mine, who I biologically raised, he's my son my whole entire life, and went to the airport. And the man that got off that plane that day, I never met in my entire life, never. God had restored him. So you say to my wife, you ever ask me or my wife about the power of God? This big book on these 12 steps. Oh, man. I owe a debt. Forget my debt. I always say, forget my debt. What I owe for my family, my friends. You know, I can speak for 2 hours on the rewards. 2 weeks ago, I just went to my youngest son's wedding. You know, I have three sons. I have three grandsons. You know, loving family. I'm there for them. I'm so many things in their lives that I can be a part of. If you're on Facebook, scroll down and look at that wedding band. We have a good time. And it's a COVID wedding where nobody could be there. We had like, I don't know, 12 people allowed. But I'll tell you what, it's, and then we'll have the real one whenever this they allow us. But we work with what we got. That's what we do today, you know? And so everything is a mild inconvenience until we get back to any sense of normalcy. Anyway, I can go on forever and ever. And thanks for having me here. Let's do some question and answer. And I'm at 802. Thanks, Steve. I hope I covered enough for you.
Oh, that was awesome, Ron. Thank you so much. I'm going to allow everyone to unmute and thank Ron real quick. Now.
Thank you. Thanks, that Ron. Was amazing.
Thanks, Ron.
Thanks, Ron.
Thank you.
Hi, David.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ron. Thank you.
Hey, Johnny.
Thanks, Ron. You're awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks
from
Texas, Ron.
Thank you, Ron.
All right.
God bless you, Ron.
Thank you, guys. Bless yous.
All right, I'll go ahead and take the meeting back one more time, and you'll get an opportunity to thank Ron at the end of the meeting as well. And then just at this point, I want to I just want to say that Larry is the user questions in the chat. So as you think of questions, go ahead and send those over to him. We'll give Ron a little break, and I'm going to do the seventh tradition, maybe call for some announcements. You'll see some links in the chat. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. I've also opened up the chat. Everyone can chat publicly. If there are several newcomers in the room tonight, men and women, if you want to offer your number, feel free to put it out, but know that it's public. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? Ebony.
Hey, y'all, I'm an alcoholic. My name is Ebony. In 2 weeks, January the 27th, Norfolk District 14 will be hosting our 12 concepts workshop. What we're doing is 12 months, 12 concepts. We're going to have a speaker come in and speak on one concept each month. On the 27th, we have Christy E., the chairwoman of VAC. It rhymes. Isn't that cute? She's going to be speaking for about 30 minutes, sharing her experience with our first concept. And then we're going to take a break and then open up for question and answers. You know, we have 12 steps, 12 traditions, 12 concepts. Hope to see you there, and I'll put the info in the chat. You can also find our flyer on tidewaterintergroup.org. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Ebony. John O., you got your hand up. You got an announcement? Can't hear you, brother. Nope. Okay. Sorry if I scared you.
No, you didn't scare me. My mute was on. I'm typing in a question. I thought that I was supposed to raise my hand.
Thank you. That's cool. Yeah, just send your question to the user questions, and we'll get them queued up. And we're seeing them come in. Keep them coming. Thank you. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
All right. So simple actions. This is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we'll be available here after we close the meeting. Please stick around. You may have come in alone, but you do not have to leave that way. Or if you're shy, feel free to send an email to info@simpleactions.net. All right, looks like we got some questions rolling in for Ron. Ron, that was amazing. Thank you so much. Our first question that was submitted, can you define what humility is and explain your experience with it?
Okay, yeah. My name is Ron, and humility. Well, this battle of recovery is the battle of self, battle of the ego. And getting to a point where I realized that I truly don't exist in the context of my mind of who I think I exist is freedom. Everything that I think I am, this actor image or this the reflection in the mirror of who I am. You know, do you ever get somebody, you ever notice like an alcoholic, you're talking to me, you know, and me, well, who are you? You know, and I would take everything personally and like everything was coming at me. And I talked a little bit about that. But getting right size and that came through a series of surrenders and an understanding. Who is it? I think is it Einstein or Socrates or something like that? He says, I know a lot when I realize I know nothing. And that was a point that I had to get to. You know, a friend of mine always says, he prays every day, give me the beginner's mind. I want to be open-minded and willing every day and be teachable. The ego rebuilds. And what happens is if I think I am something, if I, you know, you guys say a lot of nice things after I talk, thank you for your story. It was painful to live it, but it's fun to share it now. But it's not my story. It no longer identifies me and owns me. I used to be identified by what college, what my car, you know, all these external things. And so I'm no longer concerned with those things. So a series of surrenders and realizations that really I have a relationship with God. If I have that connection and I'm right size, I'm just a worker among workers. Hope that helps.
Beautiful. Thank you. We actually have a question. So since you mentioned it, well, I'm going to jump down the list a little bit, but I have a question that says, what does surrender mean and how do you get to it?
A friend of mine says it best. It's easy to surrender when there's nothing left to defend, right? And isn't that so profoundly true about the alcoholic like me? Like I've had all these opportunities to surrender, but as long as I'm a man with a plan or I got $50 in my pocket, another friend of mine says, if I could have borrowed $20 more, you'd have a different speaker tonight. Like now I understand that. And if that's, you know, maybe you didn't have that experience, but if I had another option, and so surrendering, I first surrender to alcoholism, right? Okay, I got a problem and I come to AA. Now the second surrender, I surrender to AA. I'm going to make this a way of life. Okay, third surrender, I'm going to actually do these steps. And then it's through a series of surrenders, you know, in the third step where it says, turn my life and will over. I get on my knees every morning and I say that third step prayer and I surrender every single day. And I say that so importantly because two things are very important in my life in that third step prayer. And getting on my knees is crucial because it reminds me of two things. It reminds me, one, that I'm not God, and two, that I'm working for God. And the only reason I'll do that is that I come into AA and I'm suffering sober and life is killing me, causes and conditions, me running on self-will. And it talks about that in the third step. I have to be convinced that a life run on self-will can hardly be a success. And if I'm not convinced, guess what? It's going to take a lot of convincing, which means a lot of pain and suffering. And so again, like I said earlier in my talk, I never do this out of virtue. I never do anything in AA out of virtue, out of pain and suffering. I'm like, oh crap, I got to do this. And the only true regret that I have in AA, in my life really, is that I fought this program so hard when I got here. I did not want to be here. I thought it was a sentence and I thought it was the worst thing that happened. I didn't know I hit the lottery. And if you didn't feel you hit the lottery, then we have some work to do. And I put my number up there, very easy to access. Put it in the chat. I'm on Facebook, Ron K. Doylestown. Send me a private message. I love hearing from people all around the world. And I love sharing my experience. And hopefully sometimes it can help you with yours. Because I've made, it's not, you know, the wise old man. You know, I always had a problem with that saying. What makes that guy so wise, right? Now I'm a little older. And I see that the wise old man, like, what happened is the wise old man made every single mistake he could possibly make in life and somehow managed not to die of it. So he's not really the wise old man. He's the blessed or lucky old man. And so he's trying to pass on that experience and knowledge. And if you're stubborn and you hate to follow directions, it probably won't help you if you're alcoholic. Thanks.
Let's go back. Let's go back to the Salvation Army. And I'm thinking in terms of your maybe your first experience through the steps and anything you could share on sponsorship and what got you on the path?
Believe it or not, I come from an era where you couldn't leave rehab till you completed your fifth step. And so it was a 28-day program. I told you, they kept me 45 days. And in that 45 days, I've heard so many fifth steps. And I've truly got to see a vision of how all alike we are. And that all our problems are pretty much all the same. And just, you know, the only problem, I give this talk when I talk at like Al-Anon too, is that I believe that problems are an AA and Al-Anon myth. I believe that 100%. The only problem I ever had in my life is when things don't go my way or I don't get what I want. Well, that's not a problem. That's an inability to accept reality is what I have a problem. And this is where this higher power relationship comes in, that I can live on that. So anyway, I completed that fifth step and I knew the rest. I got to a clubhouse and I would watch and I would observe people. And I'd see the people that were there for long periods of time. And they were the people that were in charge. And I joke about that when I say in charge, but they were the people that had commitments, that were taking commitments and doing AA. And so I watched and followed some of their directions and followed their lead. And I actually had a spiritual sponsor and an AA sponsor, and he was hardcore. And I love him to hear. I'll share something with you. He says, when in doubt, pig out. And he used to say, an attitude of gratitude will keep you on the right latitude. Now, he wasn't a samurai steptician, but the rest of the guys in Murray, they directed me to, they directed me to big book meetings and step meetings. And I would just constantly, and I always tell people, go into a step meeting or a literature-based meeting was like getting all my teeth drilled up. Once I hated it, especially they would read Bill's story. I'm like, just kill me now. It was so painful. These were the things that I did out of necessity and direction because I was desperate. I had to do everything they told me. I was going to drink again. I knew it. And so I would do their stupid prayers. I'd do this. I'd clean up this wreckage. I would do all this. It wasn't, nobody ever got drunk from doing the steps incorrectly. They got drunk from not doing them at all. And so that seeking and going, I was taught to seek. And I remember when they first got those Joe and Charlie cassettes, and they were like $79 or $89 for the set. And only like really rich clubhouses would have them. And you had one of those push button cassette things. And you'd have to listen like this. And we would hear this. And we would go to those meetings. And they were so powerful. Man, if I had $80, I could have my own set of cassettes. And today it's all, like I said, it's available free online, man. Everybody can get that. Listen to it day and night. Be surrounded by that, immersed in that. And not only to learn it. One, there's two steps to the steps. One is learning them. Well, you hear people, I've been through the steps once, two, three times. That's learning them. The second one is spending the rest of your life trying to practice these principles in all my affairs and apply them to all my life issue, like how I live, make it a way of life. And so today it's a way of life. It's not even, I don't even have to think about it. I live spiritual. If I had to give you one simple, I have this one guy, he has learning disabilities. And so I have to simplify this program. And I'm like, Billy, I'm going to give you one thing to do all day. Really simple. Just one thing you got to do. Ready? Be kind. Be kind to everybody you meet. You won't owe amends. You won't offend nobody and your life will change. And that's a start. If I can even get, he says, Ron, I'll be kind until I can't be kind no more. Like this is that type of, this is alcoholism. And so it's really a program of altruistic way of living, of helping others. I hate to tell you that. I don't get anything from coming to AA, coming to get. I only get it to give. If you change, and I just give this direction to everybody, one of the biggest shifts that really helped me was praying. I asked God, I'm going to a meeting. Show me how I could be helpful, where I can be of service in this meeting, whether it's chair meeting, whether it's make coffee, whether it's be a greeter, the greatest job in all of AA, or whether it is to talk and put my hand out to somebody new and say, listen, come with me. You're going to be okay. Man, that's powerful. I understand. I've been where you've been. We're not there no more. I'm going to show you the way out. It's really simple. You just do what we do. Anybody could do it. I always say a caveman could do it. And he really can, because if I can do it, anybody can do it. If Dave can do it. Anyway.
Thank you. We've got several questions around God, around the third step. I wonder if you could just share a little bit about, if you want to go personal with your conception of God, but how you established your relationship, the positioning, you know, that's described, the actor, director, et cetera.
All right. The misconception that I had coming into AA about this higher power of God, I thought it was a God of my understanding of childhood or something like that, or my God of misunderstanding. And so a lot of people will be like, well, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God. I can't work these steps. And I said, the steps don't require you to believe in God. It's a spiritual program. It's not a religious program. It has absolutely nothing to do. It's spiritual principles that are universal throughout all religious denominations. It doesn't matter which one I go to. I've studied them all, all the big ones, and come to find out at their core, they're all exactly the same. And that was the motivator to be like, wow, I have to live this spiritual life, because everybody's pointing north, and Ron, is pointing south. I'm a consumer-based society, materialism, go get yours, go make it happen. The spiritual world says, no, we're going in an opposite direction. And so the biggest problem that people have when they come in AA, they're going down the path of recovery. And it was my own experience too. And that's how I can tell you, it's everybody's experience. Come to the Y in the road. The left is cash and prizes, and the right is spiritual living. And so what I want to be spiritual, but I want to rip, rob, and steal and do whatever, you know, like I can't have my cake. I have to make a decision. So what is Ron always decides on cash and prizes first, pain and suffering. And if I make it back alive, then I go, I'm getting over to the spiritual world and seek this higher power. So I had no God of my understanding at all when I got here. I just didn't believe in any of it. And like I said, I was an atheist. So I thought, but the power of the universe and praying, and if anyone follows the directions and these steps, and this was my experience, I just prayed. You know, you hear many people say, pray to my God, pray to somebody else's God. The actual, to understand and to be able to identify God and explain God would, for me, to be God. That's the one thing. I no longer have to define it. I don't have to define it anymore. I'm out of that. I don't need the human constraints of what this picture might be of God. It's my conception, okay? And it's my relationship with this power that works for me. And it makes it very simple. And that's important, because otherwise I can get sucked into the controversies of religious people. They got their whole host of problems with that. You know, us against them, you're right, you're wrong. I'm out of that. Here, this is important. In resentments, you know, our book says we had to quit playing God, right? Why? Because it didn't work, right? And one of the ways to identify if I'm playing God is just to make a list of everything that Ron sees wrong in the world today. Now, you want to see in your life where you're playing God, write a list of all the things you see wrong in the world today. And the simple equation to recovery and freedom is this saying, everything will be okay as soon as I'm okay with everything. And that's the only time everything will be okay. You see that? That's the only way to get free. And it's through having this higher power and let him run the planet. And I actually sit back, and it's amazing. And you know what? This whole country was formed a couple hundred years ago without Ron's help. They really don't need much of my help. Anyway, good, Dave.
Thank you. Okay, I've got a question from, I'm going to leave them anonymous, but it says, after over 30 years of sobriety, I find myself in a rehab facility. I'm feeling such guilt, despite alcoholism being a disease. I'm having trouble dealing with between guilt and disease.
It's a little fragmented question. I think he's saying after being sober 30 years, he picked up and he's back in a rehab and has a problem with that.
Yes.
And I can only say from my experience that when I got to AA, if you guys promised me the best you guys could do for me is 2 years sober and $10,000 cash. I thought I hit the lottery here, right? And I had a guy, I was sitting at a meeting one time in Doylestown, and he came in, he had 10 years and he picked up, and he went out for one night and whatever, but he comes back and he's like, I threw 10 years away. And he's like, go. And I'm thinking to myself, 10 years, I know the guy that's sitting there trying to get one day, and this guy has enough, so selfish that all he cares about is that coin number that, if I came to AA and they said to me, listen, Ron, you can get sober, but every 10 years you're going to get drunk and go to rehab. I'm like, okay, I'll take that. Like, that's a really, now here's a gentleman like 30 years. Like who here would trade places with themselves? Who here's fighting with 6 days? Be like, man, give me 30. Right. And so the ego, the self, the selfishness in that and consume itself is what causes the suffering. And if I can't get free of that, and if I can't see that, how blessed I was to be alive, because here's another example. I mean, how many people die of this alcoholism and drug addiction? And I just got a dear, dear friend of mine in AA just this week, healthy, sober, he had congestion in his lungs. He couldn't breathe. They thought it was pneumonia. Anyway, they did a COVID test. No. He went to the hospital and they come to find out he's got stage 4 cancer in his lungs and his liver and his bones and like a month to live or something. I don't know. And it's so hard and so sad. And, to sit there and to sit, think that my trivial problems, that puts everything in perspective. I always tell people, if you had 7 days to live left, how important would everything be that you think is important in your life right now? Think about that. Okay, that's how important it is every day, yet I can give it all this value. Hope that was helpful.
Thank you. What is your favorite passage in the Big Book and why?
Favorite. Oh, man, I got to go to Bill's story where he says, for if an alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through service and self-sacrifice to others, he will certainly not survive the certain trials and low spots that lie ahead. And it's talking about, physical separation, physical sobriety starts, but the spiritual journey, it warns us we can't rest on our laurels, right? It says a daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of my spiritual condition, a lifelong program of living this. And so that warning and the trials and low spots are life on life's terms. I hate to say the saying that I hate the most in AA, you ever hear somebody go, when life gets lifey. Well, I'm an alcoholic. Life is lifey every minute. Man, I go to Wawa, life is lifey. I get in traffic. Okay, so when life gets lifey, but so many things, so many deaths I've been through, sober family members, loved ones. I would need hours to really give you all the information and experiences that I've had. There's so much of it. And that's what sponsorship does. It's not, so many people are caught up in the collecting of days, but it's really, a friend of mine, he sponsors guys. He was up in New York at the time. And he asked him 3 questions in the program. How many meetings you making, who you helping, who you working with? As long as those 3 things are paramount in my life, I'm going to meetings for the right reason, to be of service, and I'm working with guys and helping guys get free, I'll stay free forever. And my life will be golden, right? If I'm living selfishly, my default setting selfish. So the minute I stop or slow down, AA is like, if you really had to understand it, it's like a gym membership, really. You think about it. As long as I go to gym and diet and exercise, I'll have 6-pack abs, right? Can do that for 10 years. And after 10 years, I go, you know what? Man, I've been in really good shape. It's time to sit on that lazy boy and eat some pizzas, which I do really good. And what happens? Boom, I get out of shape and overweight, right? And so AA is the same way. It doesn't matter how hard I do AA, how spiritual I am, no matter what I do, if I do that for 10 years, like the guy said, maybe even 30 years. But if I stop doing it, I will regress back to that untreated alcoholic, and then I'll need to drink again in sobriety, no matter what. And it'll be blindside. It's like falling asleep at the wheel of a car. Just remember this, okay, this is important. And you said about which passage in the Big Book is your favorite. Well, how about my least favorite? In How It Works, it says, remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful, right? If I had one word to change, it would be that word alcohol. Of course, I tell you, alcohol is not cunning, baffling, and powerful. Alcoholism is my mind. Alcohol never brings me back. What brings me back to alcohol is my selfishness, okay? I'm too busy to go to AA. I'm too busy to help others. You know, my selfishness of, you know, over time, I would say sex and checks, romance and finance. That's going to divert me. And like falling asleep at the wheel of a car, overtime, career, family, all these trappings of success in our recovery will draw me away and intoxicate me until I need relief and I'm separated from you guys and God. And then what's left? Nothing left but a drink, right?
We're at the end of our time, but I'm going to tap you for one more question. Would you share a little bit about what being a member of a home group has meant to your sobriety?
Oh, this is great. I love, yeah, you know, and there's so many things to pick on a home group, okay? So having a home group is so vitally important for the connection. So the guys I sponsor, I always ask them, do you feel like you're a part of AA? Simple question. They usually say, well, no. And I said, oh, there's only one reason why you don't feel like you're not a member. It's because you're not. You're coming to get. You don't take part. You don't take. I have to toe the line. I have to carry my weight. I have to become a member. And I still think the greatest job in all of AA is official greeter. And if your group don't have an official greeter, you mandate yourself to be one. Get there 30 minutes before. If you're planning on being AA and making this a lifestyle, you need to meet and greet everybody. And think of the amount of fear. Like, I know people in myself, I couldn't even walk through the door. My first three rehabs, I come out and they tell me, go make a meeting. And I'm like, yeah, it's 11 o'clock. By 1 or 2, I start thinking, holy crap, there's going to be people at this meeting and they're going to look at me and they're going to think at me and they're going to know I can't do this, like fear riddled. If I can be at that door and I can just be kind and loving and offer fellowship and say, hey, welcome, I'm glad you're here. Sit down, have a cup of coffee. Just listen, you'll be okay. We're going to show you some stuff. Not bombard them, make them just feel comfortable. I believe that the most important thing we can do for the first person walking into a meeting is make them feel comfortable so they can continue to come back. And is that my primary purpose when I go to a meeting, to keep my eye out for that newcomer to be there? Or is it for me? Am I there for the coffee, the cakes, my friends, AA.com, Match.com, whatever, like the home group is a place where I have commitments, where I take part in. This is my definition of a home group. And I've been chairing this Thursday Big Book study for, I think, over a decade. It's a 28-year meeting. There's only two reasons I miss home group. I'm either dead or in the hospital. That's it. And so it's the most important thing. So I keep my program at the center, okay, of my life. And I sprinkle my life around. And you know what? My life's golden. Been married 37 years. All the things I've learned, you know, my wife, she's like my right arm or like left arm. And these are things that I learned at AA. I ask her every single day, is there anything I can do for you today? And the joke is, she always says, it's not like you're going to do it anyway. I said, it's the thought that counts, right? But I learned this in AA. I learned to take that in all my relationships. And she knows I mean it. We love when we kid around. But at work, what can I bring to work? What can I do for my coworkers in AA? What can I do for the group? How can I be of service? Changing myself from going from selfishness, it's all about me, what am I getting, to what can I give, transformed me from the most selfish, self-centered. The story I forgot to tell you about the selfishness, and I want to get this in here, it's really important because it's hilarious and it's funny and it's true. When I had this heart attack in the hospital, they wheel you around from procedure to procedure, and this kid comes, he's wheeling me around. I say, hey, how old are you? He says, I'm 19. I said, oh, you work here, right? He's like, no, I volunteer here. I go, oh, you're court ordered, right? He's like, no. I said, okay, your parents made you do it, right? He's like, no. I said, wait a minute, you're 19 years old and out of nowhere, you just thought you're just going to like volunteer for free? He's like, yeah, I like helping people. I'm like, oh my God, my head was going to explode. I'm like, I'm in AA and their life depends on them helping others and they won't do it. And you just do it naturally. Watch spiritual people that live like that. They're always happy, joyous, and free. There's the secret to altruistic give. Stop trying to get. The minute I transform into a person of giving, the joy of living comes. Thanks.
Oh, thank you. So the Thursday night Big Book is your home group. How do we find that?
If you're on, it's really easy. You send on the Conscious Contact Speaker Group Facebook page. That is my other home group. That's one of my main home groups. They go you know, brother, sister, that group is a 1 hour speaker meeting that meets every Saturday night at 8:30 PM. And the purpose of that group is to provide a consistent message of hope and recovery through God, reliance and service to others through the practice and teaching of the 12 steps. And so the whole premise is a consistent message of hope and recovery. Why? Because the hopeless alcoholic, the one thing they need when they walk in the door is hope. And that's what we strive to And you can find me on Facebook, Ron K. Doylestown. That's easy. I'm the only anonymous alcoholic one. Thanks for having me, guys. And my phone number is right there. Please call if you have any questions, if you have any concerns, if you have any complaints, call me. I love complaints. Maybe we'll write some inventory together and get free.
Thank you so much. That's going to bring us to the end of our time. You will have the opportunity again after we say the Lord's Prayer to say thanks to Ron. And I wonder if BJ would read the last three paragraphs on page 164, please.
Yeah, I'd love to. My name's BJ. I'm an alcoholic. And thank you so much, Ron. That was great. Really appreciate it. A vision for you, big book, 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. We will disclose more of you and ask him in meditation what you can do each day, man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, BJ. Thanks to Ron. Thank you, Larry, for wrangling the questions. Thank everybody for your love and participation tonight. Let's virtually circle up. Hold hands, and if you choose, we'll say the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses.
As we forgive those who trespass against us.
And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Thank you so much, Ron. That was amazing.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
It was wonderful. Amazing, amazing.
Thank Bless you, Ron. You, Ron. Bless you.
Thank you, Ron.
Yep.
Thanks again, Ron.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Ron. Yeah.
Pleasure. Yeah, take
Ron, can I have your telephone number?
Sure.
I'm in Florida.
215-534.
Wait, hang on. Hang on.
It's on the chat.
Oh. I'm on a telephone.
215. You got it? 215.
534.
534.